Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So good, so good, so good.
Perfect gifts? We've got them at Nordstrom Rack stores now. UGG, Nike, Barefoot Dreams, Kate Spade New York, and more. Find everything on their wish list all in one place.
Steve Madden? Yes, please.
It's perfect.
Did we just score?
The greatest gifts of all time? Yeah.
Head to your Nordstrom Rack store to score. Great brands, great prices, the greatest gifts of all time.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front payment equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first 3 month plan only. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes in details.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. They ship Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT.
And welcome everybody to the second part of our dive into Ingo Swann. Last week we started the book and we read about him being sort of kidnapped of sorts, but voluntarily kidnapped, I guess you could say.
Yeah, went of his own accord.
Yeah. There is a chapter after that called Feedback of Sorts, but I'm going to leave that one till the end.
Okay.
Because when he actually left the bunker that he was taken to, well, we assume it was a bunker. We don't actually know where he was taken to. Axelrod said to him that my name Axelrod is now retired when you leave here and will not be used again. We will be in touch with you in some other fashion, which I will make sure you recognize. If anyone ever asks you about Mr. Axelrod or about this place or asks if you know anything about it, such inquiries will not be coming from us. Please act accordingly for our sakes and your own. And he does. He does actually have some kind of reporter or something, an investigative reporter, ring him up and ask about that. You know, this whole situation, and he just says, "Don't know what you're talking about, mate."
Yeah, don't give anything.
And the bloke's
away.
Like, "What about Mr. Axelrod?" And he goes, "Who?" And he goes, "You know, Mr. Axelrod." And he says, "Nah, I've never heard of him." Dial tone.
Yeah.
The guy doesn't even say goodbye. That's it. There is then this, the next chapter is called Feedback of Sorts, but I'm going to leave that until the end, and you will see why. The next part is an event in Los Angeles.
Okay, all right.
So, he went over, I'm not sure exactly how long this is after, I think it's the next year, it says it's August, September 76. Traveled several times between SRI and Los Angeles, which he calls La La Land. Just see some friends, Conrad and Shafika and Viola. Mm-hmm. Now, Shafika and Viola are like mystics, you know. They're similar to him. They've got these gifts, you know, but they're a little bit dubious sometimes because he works with government contracts and stuff, and they don't. They're a bit more sceptical with government.
Okay.
But he likes to talk about, you know, all things psi, you know, psychic and whatnot. But sometimes they're very careful not to say too much. So he comes up with the idea of throwing them a nice fancy dinner, get some nice wine flowing, and that tends to loosen up their tongues.
Yeah.
So that's what they plan to do. He and Conrad go down to a local supermarket, and he is going through down the vegetable aisles, and he's looking for artichokes, I believe it is.
Oh, I love artichokes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as he's sort of getting toward, down the vegetable aisle, he sees this woman. And he calls her ravishing. He says she was notable not so much for excessive female physical endowments, but by the fact that they were barely covered. She was dressed in the briefest of halters of pink with big yellow polka dots. Beneath that were short shorts, so short they barely existed. And far beneath that, she wore a pair of platform high heels about 8 inches high. She had volumes of gorgeous black hair, and her eyes were covered by purple sunglasses. She was absolutely awesome. And he thought, good heavens. She was rummaging through the artichokes, and he wanted some. So he thought, I can have a cheeky look here, you know.
Yeah.
So he goes down and he starts inspecting the artichokes.
The actual artichokes, not
The artichokes, but, you know, he's surreptitiously having a gander at her, you know, having a good look. And as he's doing that,
it's almost love at first sight for Ingo.
Sort of. But as he's checking out the artichokes, and he stood right next to her, and she's obviously busying herself with choosing what artichokes she wants as well, he says he experiences an electrifying wave of goosebumps throughout his whole body. The hair on his arms practically stood to attention, he said, and the hair on the back of my neck definitely did. Without rhyme or reason or forethinking or anything at all, I suddenly knew she was an alien, an extraterrestrial.
I did not see that coming.
No, you know, you wouldn't, would you? You just think, oh, she's fitty.
Yeah.
And then he thought so. So because he didn't know if she'd picked up on this psychic link that he'd just experienced, he sort of cautiously moved, I guess he got his artichokes that he wanted, moved away, and he was sort of trying to keep an eye on her as he's gathering other vegetables and what he's doing. He scans the supermarket, then the very end of the vegetable aisle, who do you think he sees?
That same woman.
No, one of the twins. They're dressed casually, and he's got his eyes straight on that woman.
Oh.
Looking directly at her.
So they
know. So he's like, well, if one of them's here, where's the other one? He looks down the other end of the aisle. There's the other one, still casually dressed, watching that woman. And he's like, I think I'm in the middle of something here that I don't want to be in the middle of. So off he goes. He takes himself away from the vegetables, right the way to the other end of the store, gets what he needs to get, and goes back out to the car where with his friend, and they just sort of sit in the car, and he says, "Just wait here for a few minutes." Waits for the woman to come out, and he goes, "What do you reckon to her?" And his mate looks over, and he goes, "Oh, she's an alien."
What?
Honestly, yeah. And he's like, "What do you mean? You think she's an alien too?" And he says, "Well, yeah, she's definitely an extraterrestrial. We've got loads of them here in La La Land."
What?
That's what he actually says, yeah. So he then goes back over up to his friend's house. Obviously, they have a meal and whatnot. And he tells Viola and Shafika about this woman. And she and Viola's like, yeah, there's lots of them, you know. Many are bio-androids. And Shafika says they're dangerous, though, you know. And they've realized that Earth psychics are their only enemies. Be careful, Ingo. Be careful.
this is ramped up already.
And all of this information that he got, he didn't mention to them anything about Axelrod.
Yeah, right, okay. That's so, a top secret.
Yeah, that's secret. That's to him only at this point, because he does keep it a secret for that at least the 10 years, probably even longer than that, 20 years, 30 years, yeah. Something like that. It's only a few days after the encounter, he returned to New York. He said, I only half expected a call from Mr. Axelrod, and it wasn't long coming. Phone rang early one evening, and a cheery female voice on the other end said, Mr. Swan? He said, yes. A friend of yours would like to talk with you. Okay. He wants to talk with you on another telephone. Is it convenient for you to be at Grand Central Station at 7:30 tonight? Yeah, I suppose so. She says, very good then. Go to the vicinity of the information box in the central concourse and wait there until you see someone you will recognise. Telephone goes dead. None of these people ever say goodbye or thank you or anything. Yeah. So, he does go to the central station and he waits there around at 7:30 around the information box that he's told to go to, where he sees one of the twins.
Mm.
Twins okay. Doesn't say anything, but he sort of gives him a nod, follow me.
Yeah.
Follows him, down these corridors and into different tunnels that go off to different platforms and whatnot, and then leads him to a telephone box, dials a number, puts some money in, dials a number, has a little chat, and then just leaves the phone on the shelf, exits the telephone box and sort of indicates to Ingo Swan to go in and carry on.
This is top secret stuff.
It's very surreptitious, isn't it?
Yeah. So it's different because last time he handed out cards with writing on.
Yeah, this time the twin's not speaking.
He's not speaking, no, he's just not speaking. Gesturing.
Yeah, he's just said, there's a telephone, I've already dialed the number. Well, he didn't say it, but that's the impression got. So he picks up the telephone. The other end was a little static, and not knowing what else to do, I said, hello, Mr. Swan. It was the same cheery female voice who had telephoned me at home. So I got that one wrong, didn't I? What is that thing on your right hand? Oh, you mean my tattoo? What is its color? Mostly green. Good then. Please wait until you're linked. So yeah, a few beeps happen, a bit of static. Finally, a voice he recognizes. Axel.
Ah.
I'm sorry to have to do it this way, he began, but we had to get you to a telephone which scrambles our conversation and where you can be watched. He was about to say hello, but Axel Ross's voice became very firm. Do not say anything except answers to my questions. So, knowing he was going to yell at me because of my inadvertent encounter in La La Land, I remained quiet as a mouse, is what he says. I may seem a little aggressive, Axel said, but we would like to know why you were in Los Angeles supermarket. I was staying with some friends and we decided to cook a dinner. I wanted orange aspic with the lamb chops and I wanted the stuffed artichokes and we didn't have any. Silence. And then, there was no other reason? Had you ever seen that woman before or seen her since? No. Why were you looking at her? Well, for Christ's sake, she was extremely sexy and nearly falling out of the few clothes she had on. I first saw her from the rear and just tried to see what the front looked like up close. She was messing with the artichokes. You're sure there was no other reason? Absolutely. More silence. Then, what did you think of her? Now it was Ingo's turn to be silent for a moment while he collected his thoughts, and he says, well, I don't know why, but I got the impression she wasn't exactly like us. What was she like? Extraterrestrial. What made you think that? I have no idea. It was just an impression. She had some kind of vibes or something. She sent chills up my spine. I felt the hair on the back of my neck starting to stand up. Have you felt you've seen people like her before? If you mean, have I seen extraterrestrials before, the answer is no. Strange people, sure, but nothing like what I got from her.
Okay, that's fair.
Why did you run away so fast? Well, after I spotted the twins, I figured something was going on. The whole thing scared the shit out of me. Okay, Axel said after a pause, I'll buy it. Do you think she noticed you psyched her out? I have no idea. She was into the artichokes. The whole thing happened too fast, but she never looked at me, at least I couldn't say for sure, since her eyes were hidden behind those strange purple glasses. Think, man, Axel insisted. This is very important. Did she notice you at all? No. My best guesstimate is that she did not. Were you at the counter first, or was she? Well, she was. I first saw her from a way down the aisle, and then I decided to go up and have a closer look. You're sure? Sure of what? Well, did she make any attempt to get close to you, or was it you who made the attempt? I wanted to blurt out that the twins well knew the answer to this, since apparently they had her under surveillance. I don't think she saw me at all. It was... And she was there when I got there. Okay, good. I feel obliged to tell you that she is very dangerous. If you ever see her again, especially if she approaches you, make every effort to put distance between you and her. But act natural. Always do it naturally. Do you understand? Not really, he said, but I guess so. Good. How's your remote work viewing work coming along at SRI? He says, very good. We're getting good results. I'm understanding more every day, and I'm aiming for at least 65% accuracy across the board. Can you actually achieve that? Axel said. He said, probably, but frankly, not in every case. We all, our clients too, are interested in the possibility. We would be interested as well. We have a special task. Can you let us know when you reach 65%? How long do you think that'll take? Well, if we don't do it soon, we might not get more funds for next year. You have an office with a desk in it, right? Yes. When you reach 65%, take an ordinary piece of bond paper, 8 inches by 11 inches, write 65 on it, and leave it underneath the blotter. How the hell did he know that the desk had a blotter? Okay. Good. We'll be in touch shortly after that. Do you understand everything? He really didn't, but he says, yeah. I'm sure. You get the general drift of all this, and that no one can learn of any of this. I get the general drift. All this is serious and dangerous, right? You got it. Axelrod hung up.
Didn't say bye again.
Again, sorry. No bye. But
now, if I was Ingo, I would be thinking at this point, they're constantly watching me 24/7.
Almost, yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this part here, now, he says it was about a year later, in June 1977, he actually placed the 65% signal under the blotter on his desk. And he says the entrance to my office was code locked. Only I knew the code. It only existed in my mind. I hadn't written it down anywhere. I checked under the blotter every day and afternoon thereafter for about 3 months. And then one morning, it was gone. In its place was some dust-like powder in which a finger had scrawled two words, expect contact.
Well, this is getting more mysterious by the second.
Yeah. Okay. So the next time we meet Axelrod...
Does it ever explain how they got into the coded room?
Nope.
They just have waves.
Wherever they want to go. I mean, this, whoever they work for is such black ops, and it's so secretive. They've probably got spooks that can just pick a lock or whatever and get in wherever they need, don't they?
This is nuts.
But anyway, a few days after the message in the dust, he's at work. He's going through to the dining room with his colleagues, and he notices Axelrod standing large as life in the canteen next to the door to the washrooms.
What?
And the washrooms, for some reason, have got, you have to get a key from the counter to get in there, and Axelrod just opens it up and goes in. So,
man, like a skeleton key.
Yeah. Ingo gets his own key, goes in the bathroom, obviously, after Axel. And he says, when I entered the men's room, Axel boldly locked the door with the key and whispered in my ear, Can you get away right now for the weekend? I want to take you somewhere and show you something. Just nod yes or no. He nods yes. There's a car in a parking area outside the lobby. I'll wait for you there. Invent a convincing story for your friends. You may be away for as long as 4 days. He unlocks the door and disappears. So, Ingo goes back to his friends, obviously, makes up I think he just says he's got to go and visit I was supposed to join some friends in San Francisco for a long weekend. And they don't really think anything too much about it. He says the car outside proved to be a high-wheeled Jeep, and Axel himself was the driver. They leave SRI. Axel goes to the freeway, and they start their journey. Axel turns to him and says, "Have you ever seen a UFO?" "Yeah, I think so." "Can you describe it?" "Well, when I was in high school in Tool, Utah, I used to climb to the top of a large hill called Little Mountain. From there, you can see across the vast Bonneville Valley and see the Great Salt Lake to the north. It has big islands in it, you know? The view of the vista is just wonderful. And I used to take naps up there in the late afternoon, but on this particular day, I noticed a speck of light really high in the sky over what must have been Salt Lake City. It was flying west, and I thought it was an aeroplane moving really fast, but at a certain point, its westward flight abruptly stopped and made a right-angle turn downwards. Not a curved turn down, but exactly 90 degrees. It plunged straight down, fell into the shadows of the islands or mountains. I stood up thinking the plane had exploded or crashed, but as I did, the thing rose directly straight up out of the shadows. It rose to its former elevation, about 35, 40,000 feet up, and once there, disappeared directly into the west in a burst of speed, which was dazzling. I didn't know what to think of this, but years later, I decided it must have been a UFO. Axelrod was silent. And then he says, "We may have an opportunity to see one of them rather close. Are you game?" Well, yeah. Of course he is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they travel to an airport, abandon the car right outside the front door.
Okay, no, don't worry about parking.
No. And there's a Learjet waiting for him.
Now, you know you've got power and money when you can just park out front somewhere and just leave your car.
Yeah, leave your Jeep just right, random, in a no parking zone.
Yeah.
And just walk through an airport onto your own private Learjet.
Damn.
So they basically get comfortable in the Learjet. There is some conversation and whatnot. But they are then... I think one of the twins is flying the Learjet.
Of course he is.
And Axel does say that it looks like a Learjet, but it's a lot more better, you know. They've obviously got a lot of technology in there. I think Ingo has a little sleep on the flight and that sort of thing. But yeah, that's their thing. And they land in this little backwaters. It's more of like an airfield that isn't like a main airport or nothing. It's just some dodgy little airfield.
Okay.
And jump in a van, I think it is. Drive for about another 2 hours. And then they stop, and Axel's like, "Right, we're on foot from here." And they hike up this trail. He doesn't know where in the country he is at this point. It's just very much wilderness. It might even be Canada or somewhere like that.
Yeah, I can't imagine with all the traveling and flight and driving.
Yeah.
He's very trusting, this Ingo Swan.
Oh yeah, very very trusting. But yeah, they make it to the top of a hill, and the view that they've got in front of them is of a large lake.
Mm-hmm.
And the two twins are there, Axel's there, Ingo's there, and he's told to just sit down, be absolutely silent, and don't move a muscle. Wait, it's gonna happen soon. Now this fog starts building over the lake, and the twins and Axel are like, "Ooh, ooh, ooh, this is it, it's beginning now."
A fog
makes its way across the lake. Axel goes, it's begun. Please, please, do not make any noise and do not move unless we tell you. So he can't really see a lot at the moment. The fog continues to build for about 5 minutes. And then he says, suddenly I saw what had begun. For in a moment's eye flicker, the grey fog changed, first into luminous neon blue and then into angry purple. At that point, Axel and one of the twins put a firm hand on each of my shoulders. And it was a good thing they did. A network of purple, red and yellow lightning bolts shot in all crazy directions through the cloud, and I would have jumped up if not held down. And then there it was, somewhat transparent at first, but in the next few seconds, as if fading up, like a movie term, out of nowhere, there it was, solidly visible over the lake, whose reflecting waters I could now clearly see again. And it was getting bigger. He said, I don't know how it was getting bigger. It had already materialized, but then it was sort of growing in scale.
Well, the UFO.
Yeah. And it was kind of diamond-shaped. That's what he says. It appeared to be diamond-shaped. At that moment, in my astonishment, we could hear a wind coming, and it moved past us like a tangible magnetic field, rustling the pine trees around us. Two firm hands on my shoulders tightened, warning me not to move in pure physical reaction. At the same time, ruby-red laser-like beams began shooting out from the thing, which incredibly was now growing even more in size, while still stationary in its original position, floating over the lake. One of the twins now talked very softly. The sound of his voice was like thunder to me. Shit, they're enveloping the area. They're going to spot us. I had no time to wonder about what he meant. Indeed, some of the red laser beams began blasting pine trees, of all things. At the same time, the thing had now increased in size to what might have been about 90 feet wide. The whole of this so far had been accomplished in complete silence. Even the electric bolts had not crackled. The blasting of trees, though, was now audible. At the same time, I could begin to hear low-frequency pulsations. Axel says, they're blasting deer and porcupines or something up in the forest. Obviously, you know, they need food.
Picture this, you're halfway through a DIY car fix, tools scattered everywhere, and boom, you realise you're missing a part. It's okay, because you know whatever it is, it's on eBay. They've got everything, brakes, headlights, cold air intakes, whatever you need, and it's guaranteed to fit, which means no more crossing your fingers and hoping you ordered the right thing. All the parts you need at prices you'll love, guaranteed to fit every time. eBay, things people love.
Holiday magic is in the air, and DSW's got all the shoes to make your season extra merry. Believe, you've got parties to attend and lists to check twice, so DSW is taking care of the details, like gifts to make their eyes all aglow, styles that bring joy to your world, brands everyone wants, like UGG, Nike, Birkenstock, and more, and deals to make your budget bright. Find the perfect shoes for you and yours at a DSW store near you or DSW.com.
Yeah. The beams sense biological body heat, and they're sure to hone in on us. At that moment, the two hands tightened on my shoulders, and I was dragged and practically thrown back into a ditch. There was a terrific pop where we had just been, and some large branches of nearby pines cascaded down onto us. And that was my last sight of the triangular thing. But in that last moment, I could see the water of the lake surging upward like a waterfall going upwards as if being sucked into the machine.
That's odd.
Yeah, very, very odd.
The whole situation is odd, but an upwards waterfall.
Yeah.
Was it almost like the UFO was getting energy from the water?
I mean, if these are the same beings that he's encountered on the moon... The moon has no water on it. I mean, it does have sort of permafrost ice in certain places, but not drinkable water. They need water and they need food. There's nothing on the moon, so they would have to come to Earth to get it, wouldn't they?
That makes sense. Porcupines, though. God, that's a delicacy.
I don't know. Why not? but, yeah, I mean, basically, that is kind of the end of it, really. He did have a cut on his leg. They dressed it for him, and they make their way back to the van and back to the airport, the little airfield.
So these lightning bolts and stuff were actually quite lethal. They were destroying stuff.
Yeah, they had to kill him.
So they weren't just beams of light. They were actual kind of lasers.
Yeah, your Star Wars laser beams. Ooh. Yeah, basically. Now, at one point, Axel asks him, "What did you sense?" And Ingo's like, "Are you joking me? You could have at least warned me that you wanted me to try and sense something. Like, you told me to sit there in absolute silence and just observe. You didn't tell me what to expect. Mm-hmm. What was I supposed to sense?"
Yeah, panic, I imagine.
Yeah, exactly.
Stress, worry.
But yeah, I mean, that is sort of it, really. Axelrod laughs, changes the subject. He says, "Well, yeah, it was probably a dangerous risk to expose you to this appearance, and we really had no right to do it." He said, I laughed and relaxed. "Jesus, Axel, I'm ready for it, go for it again. Who wouldn't be?" And Axel says, "Well, probably that will not be possible. I shouldn't tell you, but our mission will be disbanded shortly and the work picked up by others because of strategic security reasons involved." And he says... Ingo says, "Others who will not mix with the psychics, I take it?" "You got it. Next week you will be summoned for a complete physical examination, ostensibly in line with overseeing the health status of the people on your project. We just want to be sure you experience no physical damage. The physicians performing the examination will be ordinary doctors who have no knowledge of our existence. You can explain your leg injury in some way there." And Ingo says, "I won't have time next week. We're going to Catalina Island to do some underwater remote viewing experiment with a submarine. I'm okay. The cut on my leg is small. I won't have to explain to anyone. The last time I saw Mr. Axelrod was at the San Jose airport. And so there ends the tale of my encounters with him and his ultra-subterranean covert mission. I cannot prove a word of what that tale... And because this was the case, I never intended to make a written record of it." It was only sometime later, quite a lot later, that he decided to actually write this down. Now...
And the twins are gone as well.
Yeah, the twins... never ever sees Axel or the twins, has any more encounters with them.
So that was his last mission with them?
Yeah.
Wow. And he actually got to see a UFO close up.
Yeah.
And in some ways attack him.
Yeah, almost got killed by one, you might say.
Mm.
Now, here's a couple of things that I'm going to jog your memory.
Yeah.
One is, do you remember last week when he first met Axelrod?
Yes.
Axel asked him if he had heard of or met a man called George Leonard.
Yes.
And he said, "No, I don't think so." And Axel got pictures out and put it on the desks and asked him to...
Yeah, and he recognised two of them, but not...
But not George Leonard.
Yeah.
Now, a few months after that, like I say, this I should have explained this earlier, but for a reason I'll explain it in a second, I didn't. This chapter, feedback of sorts, what happens is, do you remember I said... Axel would send him feedback in a stamped but unmarked envelope.
Yeah, because he wanted feedback straight away.
That's right. So a few months after his first encounter with Axel, that's exactly what happened. He got a stamped but unmarked envelope, and in that envelope was a book titled... Somebody Else Is on the Moon, and the author's name was George Leonard. He said, "I spent the next few hours reading it and then reread it two more times. Apparently at the time of my ultra secret visit, Mr. Axelrod had already known that this book was coming out, and of course he'd been interested in whether I knew the author or not. Leonard apparently had obtained NASA photographs of the moon, which, after all, are in the public domain because most of NASA's work is funded by taxpayer money. And when I first read this book, about 6-7 years ago, that just flew completely over my head. I didn't really take any notice of it. But this time round, I nearly fell off my chair when I read that. And I'll tell you now why. It's because a few weeks ago, when we were doing the original Moon Anomalies episode, which came with its own gremlins, much like last week's episode came with gremlins, we're hoping this week won't have any gremlins, but we don't know. When we did that original Moon Anomalies episode, I bought the book Somebody Else Is on the Moon by George Leonard.
Oh, so it's linked.
How do I do these things?
That's crazy.
Isn't that a little bit scary? And yeah. I mean, I only got it because the pictures that he has put in the book are NASA footage pictures, and I wanted to use it to show you the structures on the moon.
Yeah, yeah.
But this is an Amazon reprint, and the quality of the photos, even the quality of the writing is so blurry and horrible, I ended up not using it.
Yeah, yeah. So you ordered the book.
I ordered
thinking,
the book.
Oh, that would be great for the episode.
That'd be great. And then it turned out, yeah, well, not good enough to actually use in that episode for the reason that I wanted it. But then when it appears in Ingo Swann's book, Penetration, yeah, as his feedback, as his proof for what he's seen on the moon, I was like, well, I'm going to have to read this book now, aren't I?
Oh, that's crazy.
And that is why I said last week that we might actually be able to start doing sort of a bit of a series. I'm not going to do it week after week after week. We're not going to do another 6 weeks of Moon Anomalies, but it could be something we could pick up at a later date, comparing the results from these books. Because Ingo, he did go back through. He re-sketched out some of the things that he sketched for Axel from memory and compared it with what George Leonard was finding in the photographs, and dangerously close, mate. Scarily close.
So that is kind of proof that he was able to astroproject?
Remote view. Yeah, these things that he's drawn here in the book, that's what he's seen. And then when you go through this book, you'll see very, very similar sketches and stuff. So I think it would be an interesting thing, because the rest of Ingo Swann's book is his theories on the moon and that sort of thing.
Oh, okay.
He goes on about like the Apollo 14 mission. Once the lander had left the moon, it ejected the landing stage back onto the moon. And when it hit the moon's surface, the seismographs that they'd left there recorded, obviously, sort of earthquakes. It's been reported that the moon rang like a bell for nearly an hour.
Wow. From that little stand?
Yeah.
Well, I suppose it wouldn't be little, would it?
It's not so little, but I mean, it's not a massive object,
but it was enough
is it? But
create
it was enough to,
tremors.
Yeah, tremors on the moon, and made it rang for like a bell for nearly an hour. And I just think that since we've got this ton of information here, we might as well readdress this at some point in the future, if people are interested, at least anyway. You know, why don't we carry on digging into the moon a little bit?
Well, I know my buddy
Jack. At risk of the cameras all failing on us and hard drives corrupting things.
Well, I know my buddy Jack would love it because he loves everything to do with the moon.
Yeah, so do I. I mean, it's, you know, it's me. Space is kind of my passion.
Yeah, yeah. It is fascinating. Like, that's a crazy coincidence though, because I remember you saying about that book, and I remember you saying, yeah, I got this book from Amazon, but yeah, the quality is not great, so I don't think I'll bother using it. And then now you've just unveiled that.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how the other week we mentioned Mystic Meg. 4 days later, she died.
Yeah.
On that episode, Moon Anomaly episode, I buy this book, don't use it, read this one, and it's mentioned in this one. Yeah. So it's like, how in tune you keep calling me.
Yeah.
Get out of my head, pirate. You're in tune.
You are in tune, man. No, that is nuts.
Maybe I've got my own little psychic ability, eh?
Oh, possibly.
Who knows?
I'm guessing Ingo, with that as kind of proof, he's gone from like a 65%. So surely that's made him into like the 80-90%.
Well, I don't know what Ingo would say his hit rate is. I mean, obviously it got better and better and better. And like I said at the start of last episode, he is seen as the father of remote viewing because he was so good at it.
Yeah.
And because of all this research that he did, he sort of, I think he's like even started schools teaching people how to do it and that, like, you know.
Is he still around today?
He died in 2013.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah.
We could have had him on the podcast.
That would have been nice. Yeah, it would have been awesome. But, excuse me. That is my story on Ingo Swann, anyway. The book is called Penetration. You can buy it from Amazon, like I did, and read more of it yourself if you want a slightly more detailed description of it. It's a good read. I will do recommend it. So we've got to put it to the paranormality scale now, Josh. What do you reckon?
Oh, well.
How believable do you think that is?
You know what? I think a lot of it is... I keep bashing the table with my leg. My apologies. I reckon that there's a lot of it. You could almost give each section its own paranormality rating. Because some things are obviously more fascinating and more believable. But as a whole, I still find it very believable. Because the way and the lengths that Axelrod and the twins went through to keep that so secret.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And it's such an in-depth, I suppose, experience. Because Ingo's got the drawings. He's kind of proved what he saw on the moon. The only thing I'd like to know more about, so I might borrow the book, is about the alien. Like, how did his friend know it was an alien as well? Could he remote view as well? Or?
Yeah, I think he's got his own sort of... these are like a circle of psychic people that he sort of moves and relates to. As for how his mate just instantly looked at the woman and said, yeah, no, it's an alien, obviously.
That's bizarre. You know,
that is a little bit bizarre. But
me, personally, I really enjoyed this story. Yeah. I was very fascinated at last week's episode and today's episode.
I come up with some good books, don't I?
Yeah, real fascinating. Oh man, I really enjoyed it, so I'm gonna give it an 8.9.
I think that's low, mate. I'm giving it a 9.3. Yeah.
I wanted to give it a 9.1, but I need more answers for the aliens. That's
fair
the
enough,
only bit.
Yeah.
That's the only bit where I'm like, oh.
Fair enough. What I think. Well, the fact that it's the level of secrecy.
Yes, yeah.
But because he's not signed a document to say that he's got to keep it secret, and it's so many years later that he even brings it up and writes the book about it, and just the way it's all carried out, it seems very real to me.
It does, yeah. It really does, and...
It's tenable.
From the get-go as well, with the mysterious phone call, the passing of the notes... The gestures.
Yeah, and it all came from his original friend who works, we assume, somewhere in the White House, or did.
Yeah.
Who was just asking him for a favour.
Yes. Yeah, all right, I'll give it a solid 9 then.
A solid 9?
Yeah. You've bumped up a bit for me.
Fair enough.
I'll give it a solid 9.
That would give us an average of 9.15, wouldn't it? 9.3. So, yeah, no, that's a good result then.
Yeah, that's a very good story. I'm going to borrow that book from you.
Yeah, go for it, mate.
I want to know more about the alien part as well.
It's good, yeah.
But, I mean, you can't blame a guy for falling for a woman who loves artichokes.
So. No, exactly. Particularly if she's scantily dressed.
Yeah. He was checking out her artichokes. So.
Yeah.
No, very good. Very good podcast. I really enjoyed that, mate.
That's, thank you, mate.
You've got a way with storytelling that gets me hooked where I'm like...
I know, you've been dying to get this second part done all week, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been keep saying to you, Ingo Swann part two. So, but now, yeah, I want to know
mind
more.
Blown.
Yeah, he had a bit of everything in there. You know, the other bit that got me was... I was hoping when you said about the woman and described her so well, I was thinking, this story's already got action. It's got mystery. I was like, now there's a bit of romance. And then you went, turns out she's an alien. I was like, oh, no. I thought old Ingo was going to get a bit of romance. I thought you were going to say, like, maybe you met his wife and then she got involved and, you know.
Well. What I'd like to know is if he ever actually encountered the woman again, what made her dangerous?
Yeah. Could she feel the vibes as well?
We don't know. He doesn't say. I mean,
Oh, I wish he was around. We could ask him.
Yeah, yeah. It would be good. Send him an email, get him on the podcast. But without having a time slip, that's not going to happen.
No. And I think the reason I like this so much is because shout out to the Doddleston Messages crew, because it's very similar in a way where it's unique, it's different.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, some people are very quick to ridicule and judge and things like that. But I think when you actually take the time to invest in a story and actually get your research from the book and from the people themselves.
And it's realistic as well. It is. With the vertical plane, the Doddleston Messages, all the way through the book, they were trying to debunk it themselves, trying to prove that it was somebody playing a prank on them.
Mm-hmm.
And this time, it's, you know, I mean, he's a psychic or whatever, you know, he's got his psychic abilities. What is so unbelievable about the government wanting to utilise that back in the 1970s?
Yeah, yeah.
And keep it a black ops operation, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh, exactly, mate. I find it very fascinating.
It is very fascinating.
I loved it.
And everybody out there can enjoy it themselves, buy the book, Amazon. I think it was about £20, English pounds. Very worthwhile read. And I guess with that, we're drawing to a close.
Yeah.
So
you've penetrated my heart.
If you at home have found other books like this that you'd want us to deep dive into and tell some spectacular stories, we'd love to hear what your thoughts are on that. Always, obviously, send us an email with your own stories, paranormality.uk@gmail.com. Like and subscribe. Comment where you can. Give us a rating.
Mm.
We still want more ratings.
Yeah, we need some reviews. You know?
Reviews and ratings is what we want from our audio crew.
Yeah, yeah.
So we know that you're actually digging it.
Step up, audio crew.
The audio podcast has taken a boom recently. We're doing quite well with that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's growing well. So thank you to everybody that's downloading the podcast and enjoying it. And spread the word. Tell your friends.
Mm. Yes. Tell everyone you know.
Yeah. If you can get one other person to download our podcast on a regular basis, I'll give you a kiss.
Oh, pirate smooches.
Yeah. But until then, I've been Pirate.
I'm Josh.
This has been Paranormality UK. Ta-ta.
Ta-ta.
Oh my God, it's the coolest thing ever. Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? Well, check this out. It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic famous foods from restaurants across the country anywhere nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. They ship Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. Seriously. So if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT.
Professionals spend nearly half the work week on written communication, so focus is important. With Grammarly as your AI writing partner, focus and quickly get through work with relevant real-time suggestions. And it works across 500,000 apps and websites, so you can sound more confident and persuasive wherever you write. 93% of professionals report that Grammarly helps them get more work done. Download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast.
Does your next investment opportunity include $8 trillion in private wealth and 300 plus connections with wealth management firms all in one place? Invest in Dubai, the world's fastest growing venture capital ecosystem and a global wealth hub. With access to Dubai International Financial Center, unlock unmatched business opportunities. Join Dubai's financial revolution, where growth meets opportunity. Visit www.dubaibeyondpossible.com to know more.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details. Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.